Begin after six taps. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Hi, it's Lady P coming at you from the TCM, a classic film festival. Joining me today is surprise feminist cab driver, Miss Kristen Sales.
Hello.
Hello. This is our first mini-sode of the fest. As promised, we're delivering recaps, highlights, updates, lots of meandering, lots of tangents. But primarily, we're just going to talk about what we've seen and what we've enjoyed, and if there's anything we haven't enjoyed. I think thus far, things have been going pretty well.
I have to say that among days, a full day at the TCM Fest is one of the better days that you will have in your life. And today was particularly fantastic. We saw all of the movies we saw together today.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in one theater and one theater only, the best theater in Los Angeles, the Egyptian Theater.
Here, here.
Newly retrofitted, smelling shiny and new and clean, and all the movies we saw were of a particular type. So we kind of had a very on-brand day. There wasn't a lot of running. Sometimes at TCM Fest, you're running back and forth between venues, and you get hot and sweaty and grumpy, and the movie you're seeing could be from the 70s, and then you go to one from the 20s. Today was all kind of a piece.
Yeah. We covered primarily, they were all pre-code, except for one silent film.
Right, which is technically...
It is technically pre-code. It came before the code, precedes the code.
Right.
But shall we just step through them? First thing, 9 a.m., we saw Rafter Romance.
Rafter Romance, which is a Paramount pre-code starring a pre-superstardom Ginger Rogers.
Right. It was the same year as Flying Down to Rio?
Yes, same year, 33. Peak pre-code year. And then there was a really interesting introduction about the history of the film, because if you've been to TCM Fest before, you probably know the infamous legend of Double Harness last year, which was the crazy screening that got sold out twice and people were just, like, losing their minds. But Rafter Romance is a film like Double Harness in that it had some copyright issues. So it wasn't seen for like 50 years, and then TCM like sorted that out and then was able to represent the films on their channel and at the festival. So before Rafter Romance, there was actually a little title on the print itself that said Turner Classic Movies, because it's one of the ones that they've actually fostered into public view, which was cool.
Yeah, and I'm really glad they did, because I thought it was delightful.
It was super delightful. It's just like, it's one of those like perfect like 70-minute movies where you know the plot and you know what's going to happen and you know every sort of beat of it, but it's still super fun. Like, it's just like a breezy, like, cool.
Yeah, and there are a number of surprises that you wouldn't necessarily expect from a movie from 1933. I think that's sort of the nature of a pre-code movie, is that it's a little bit racier than you might expect.
Yeah, I think it's only a surprise based on your own expectations.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you aren't familiar with films from that era, then you have this like maybe later 30s or 40s idea of sort of like a more stodgy, reserved, classical conception of cinema. And then like pre-codes are like, they're about people that you would recognize. It's a lot more like New York stories, like street level, sort of like ethnicity. And it's like the Depression. So there's definitely, it's an economic anxiety movie, because it's about these two tenants in this apartment building, and neither of them can afford to pay their rent, basically. So they owe the landlord a bunch of back rent. And so the landlord conspires to rent out the attic or the loft part, which belongs to this like ne'er-do-well artist, and give it to Ginger Rogers' characters, because he works at night and she works during the day. So it's basically an apartment split comedy, which, of course, there have been many of those. And it goes exactly where you think it does, but it's still a total blast.
Yeah, it's kind of the reverse of Shop Around the Corner.
Yeah,
in that,
in a way,
they get along when they're in person, but they hate each other in their letter exchanges.
There's some really good passive-aggressive roommate behavior.
Yeah.
Like, it's the world's worst roommate situation, like where they're leaving each other like super mad notes, which I think everyone has done in a roommate situation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was really good. I liked a lot.
And I do think we should explain the intro. There is a surprising feminist cab driver who comes attempts to come to Ginger Rogers' rescue. Right, yeah,
there's this, like, burly-looking dude who's just, like, the cab driver, like, in the neighborhood. And Ginger Rogers has a pestering boss, played by, of course, Robert Benchley, who's trying to, like, paw her in the back of this cabbie. And the cabbie is, like, making eye contact in the rearview mirror. And Ginger Rogers is like, no, 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 I don't like this guy. And he's like, don't worry about it, I got this. And then he, like, interrupts them. And he's just, like, this tough guy, but all he wants to do is, like, stick up for the women in his cab. And I was like, that's such a nice character. Like, that's such a cool choice. So, surprise feminist cab driver is, like, one of my favorite characters so far at the festival.
Yeah. And while Rafter Romance was... I think it's the most surprising. It's kind of the hidden gem of the bunch of films that we watched today. I think my favorite is probably the second film that we watched, which was 1 Hour with You.
I think I'm going to agree. And I hadn't seen it before.
Okay.
I had only seen like one Maurice Chevalier movie before and only a couple Lubitsch's before. And at first I was like, oh, this is going to be corny. And it was like immediately the funniest thing ever.
Yeah.
I was so into it. Mm-hmm. Which I guess is unsurprising, but it was just completely delightful.
Yeah. I mean, if you only know Maurice Chevalier from Gigi.
Or like, Gigi. Or as Pepe Le Pew. Like, that's the only way that I know.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Pepe Le Pew is Charles Boyer.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Okay, a special guest is piping in, and I guess my mistake, Pepe Le Pew is Charles Boyer. I always thought it was...
It's Charles Boyer.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's gotta be both of them, right? Is Charles Boyer's act like a ripoff of Maurice Chevalier?
I don't know. I feel like Charles Boyer plays it straight all the time, whereas Maurice Chevalier is...
He's camping it up.
Yeah.
Well, this is a sidebar discussion.
I will say that perhaps the intonation is Charles Boyer and the creepiness is Marisha.
Okay, fair.
Okay,
fair. I hope listeners can hear that. That should I say who you are? Do you want to keep it anonymous?
Not a mystery guest.
Okay, mystery guest. We'll see if anyone can identify that voice.
The mystery guest in the background. We've come to detente, and we've decided that Pepe Le Pew is mostly Charles Boyer with perhaps some Maurice Chevalier influence. Yeah. Although I found Maurice Chevalier in this movie less creepy and more charming.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it was just the mood I was in, but it was great. I even like Jeanette McDonald and Genevieve Tobin, right? Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it was, I liked the rhyming.
Yeah.
Like, it's, what a corny device. But the thing about Lubitsch that I was in awe of during this movie is he knows how to end the movie at the perfect time. Because mm-hmm. there's a little bit in, I guess, two-thirds of the way through that kind of slows down and gets a little serious because it's like this story of this married couple who are perfectly married and they just love having sex with each other, and then like some new people come in and then it all goes tits up and they all start flirting with each other and everything, and then it gets a little serious in terms of like actually talking about their marriage, right. But then at the end,
but thank God,
yeah, thank God everything lightens up. Yeah. But it was just like when I was watching it, I was just like, I think this has to wrap up soon because it hasn't gone anywhere new in a while. And then, like, as soon as I thought it ended, like, 5 minutes later. Yeah. The perfect ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that Lubitsch touch, I guess. Exactly. That all the kids are talking about.
Yeah. And we watched two Lubitsches.
We did. Today. You want to skip over to
that? We're going to skip the third movie. Go right to the fourth.
Yeah.
And so this is Paris?
So this is Paris. Yeah, which is a Lubitsch silent.
Yeah.
So, 1 Hour with You is from 32. That's like peak pre-code Lubitsch. Well, I guess Trouble in Paradise is.
Yeah.
But, and then this one is 1926. And I think it was his first Hollywood movie. Am I wrong?
That's, I think, Rosita.
Okay. Yeah, but it's pretty early in his Hollywood career. Yeah.
Yeah.
So had you seen this one before?
Yeah. I saw this one in college. But all I remembered was the Mitzi song. Oh, that Mitzi. You're welcome. I hadn't seen And So This Is Paris. I'd seen 1 Hour with You.
1 Hour with You, but you hadn't.
But
seen
I hadn't this is, seen so this And Paris. So This Is Paris.
So what'd you think?
I thought it was pretty delightful.
Yeah.
I would, it's sort of a precursor to.
It is. It's almost this, like the. Yeah. It's almost like the rough version.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
It.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of. Like, the main character in both of those movies are doctors, and they both get their, like, slick back hair ruffled by a woman, and that's kind of, like, a flirtatious sign. I just feel like the limitations of So This Is Paris are technological, because you want to have that, like, fast patter dialogue. And the intertitles are funny, but just in terms of being able to deliver, I feel like, the level of comedy that Lubitsch gets at later, you kind of have to wait for the sound technology to get good.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was just, especially seeing 1 hour with you before in the same day, it was sort of just like, oh, this is similar, but kind of a less satisfying version of that.
Sure, yeah. And I think this is also, I want to say it precedes The Marriage Circle, which is another version. I think The Marriage Circle, 1 hour with You, I believe, is a remake of The Marriage Circle.
Yeah, I think they talked about that. Yeah,
and so that is kind of the perfect version of that story. That's the quintessential Lubitsch marriage triangle or whatever.
Pentagon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
however many sides that quadrilateral thing has.
We're not good at math.
Yeah. But
so yeah, that was,
it was absolutely delightful.
Yeah, that was the last one we saw. And then between the two Lubitsches, we decided to stick around The Egyptian because we were like, well, we're kind of on a roll with like these pre-code comedies, and the theme of the festival is comedy, so we might as well like laugh as much as possible today. Mm-hmm. And so we stuck around for Monkey Business, the Marx Brothers movie, even though it wasn't, it's in The Egyptian, but they weren't showing a print. They were showing the Universal restoration of it. But it was still great, and it was introduced by, should we say who was introduced?
The one and only Dick Cavett.
Dick Cavett.
My future best friend.
The best. I mean, in terms of like getting a guy to come and tell stories before a movie, who tells better stories than Dick Cavett? It was amazing. He told all of these like fantastic Groucho Marx stories and a really good Chico Marx story, which I will not ruin. Because by the time this episode comes out, I'm sure you can find the video online, but it was fantastic.
Yeah. We'll just say it involves Tallulah Bankhead.
Tallulah Bankhead. So you know where it's going.
The best stories do.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chico Marx, Tallulah Bankhead. You put the dots together. I mean,
mystery guest pops back in to say check out precode.com's Twitter for the story.
Check out precode.com's Twitter for the story.
That's right. Yeah. Precode.com got the whole video.
Okay.
So maybe we can tweet, we can retweet it.
We'll do that.
When this episode comes out.
For sure.
Because it's a good, good vid.
Yeah.
But anyway, Monkey Business. I mean, what do you say about the Marx Brothers?
Sure.
It's funny.
Yeah. I have to say, I think that stories about Groucho and the guys are generally funnier than the movies. That's not always true.
Yeah.
But I love
because
the stories.
Their stories don't need to have plots like the movies do.
Yeah.
Even though I've never really like minded or hated Zeppo Marx, like I feel like some people do.
He's too
benign.
Yeah. What is there to say?
He's like
there.
He's like perfectly inoffensive and perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And he's good. And you like need like a romantic hero or whatever. And he gets in a really long and cool fist fight at the end of this movie. And I thought actually there's a lot of really good one-liners in this, even more than like their more quote unquote developed movies, you know, like Night of the Opera, which is pretty plotty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. Night of the Opera is like a perfect movie, but this one has a lot more like vaudeville-esque one-liners and a lot more absurdism. So like if you like your Marx Brothers with more non sequiturs and more just absurdism, then Monkey Business is kind of for you.
I have to say Groucho always used to be my favorite, but as I get older I gotta go with Harpo.
Harpo's always been my favorite. Also, I think we should talk about the fact that Harpo is the most handsome Marx Brother as well. Ooh, is this a controversial opinion?
Mystery guest says Harpo is a babe.
Harpo is a babe. You heard it here first. Choice. Well, I guess I guess our listeners can chime in on which like this is like a Teen Beat article now, but I mean like or no Tiger Beat.
Yeah,
Tiger Beat center. Which Marx Brother would you rather have as a Tiger Beat centerfold? Tweet us your answer.
Yep,
I'm gonna go Harpo.
Okay, interesting. I don't know. I felt like all of the women were so beautiful, and all the dudes are just, like, kind of grotesque.
What? The Marx Brothers? You don't think the Marx Brothers are pretty babes? Pretty babely?
I really don't.
Have you ever seen them outside of character? They're pretty good looking.
It's possible I haven't. Maybe without the wig and everything.
I mean, Margaret Dumont is not in Monkey Business, so obviously if she was in Monkey Business, she would be the hottest person in the movie.
Yes.
But she's not. So, you know, what else is there to say?
Yeah. Okay.
But I love that because I love going to Marx Brothers movies at TCM Fest because just listening to the laughter in and of itself is like a activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I really dug it.
Yeah. So that's Thursday. Or that's Friday. That's the second day of the fest.
So this is Friday.
Yeah. And so this is Friday. Stay tuned for more updates from the fest.
One last update from mystery guest. Chuck Jones himself said that Pepe Le Pew was modeled after Charles Moyet in Algiers.
Oh, that's right. I do remember reading that.
His name is Pepe Le Moco.
Yeah,
Pepe
that's true.
All right. Now, we've been schooled.
We've been scooped by Chuck Jones. But I still feel like the Marie Chevalier influence. Now, it could be that it's third gen, right? Because it could be that Charles Boyer was cashing in on Marie Chevalier's.
That's true.
Because I know that our mystery guest is technically correct because I remember that as being a true fact. Look, listeners, chime in.
Yeah.
Pepe Le Pew, what French stereotype do you think that he most resembles?
Yeah. all answers are excited. We could make a claim for Gerard Depardieu if you
Gerard
want.
Gerard Depardieu.
Yeah.
Gerard Pepe Le Pew.
Okay. But before we sign off this episode, I just quickly want to talk about Wednesday night, which I know is a really significant night for the two of us because it's kind of why we come here beyond the opportunity to see all of these classic films.
Yeah.
Even more than that is the opportunity to kind of bond with our fellow classic film nerds. And it's just been a real treat to get to talk to people and meet people that we only get to interact with on Twitter.
Yeah.
And Wednesday was a really special opportunity.
Yeah, it was a really swank TCM fan meetup.
Yeah.
Sort of, or like press people or people that you may have seen around the fest and some special guests. And it was at the Roosevelt Hotel. And it was just like really chummy and really just kind of like going to a bar with your friends in the best way possible.
Yeah.
And also in that afternoon, there were like unofficial fan meetups by the pool at the Roosevelt, and you would just run into people in the lobby and, you know, exchange pleasantries. A lot of these people, like, you only see once a year.
Yeah.
But it feels like you know them more because you're talking throughout the year between, like, your marking time between fests, you know?
Yeah.
And then you kind of, like, get to suss everybody out and see what they're most excited for. And especially if there's someone that you want to see a lot or you want to really know where they're going to be because you know they're super fun.
Mm-hmm.
You got to gotta get your deets in on Wednesday night and be like, where are you going to be? Where are you going to be? Because I want to hang out with you.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was really fun and we had a great time.
Yeah. Also, Thursday night, Martin Scorsese was here.
Oh, God. Martin Scorsese was here because the Film Foundation, I think, helped finance or helped make possible the retrofitting of the Egyptian to screen the nitrate films that they're screening here. I think they're doing a nitrate a day because they're doing four. And on Thursday night was The Man Who Knew Too Much, the 30s, the first time Hitchcock did it with Peter Lorre. And as a last-minute addition that was announced that afternoon, it was introduced by Martin Scorsese. Now, neither of us was able to attend. It's, pouring one out for our opportunity to see that. But because they're screening a nitrate-like film every day of the festival, I feel like that is a blessing and that we should just, like, thank our lucky stars that we'll have other opportunities.
Yeah.
Maybe Marty will be there. I don't know.
Who knows?
No promises.
Yeah. Does our special guest want to chime in with any surprise guests at any of the nitrates? Nope.
Our
lips are sealed.
Our surprise guest is not at liberty to say.
All right. No, but we'll just have to stay tuned. We'll keep you updated. All right. I guess that's it for this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're gonna have others.
We stay tuned, exactly. We'll have more updates over the next couple days. Let me just say, for you sadists who are listening, who are like trying to exacerbate your FOMO.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, but we all have our own FOMOs.
Or you're not sadist, you're masochistic.
Because everyone at the festival is having a different festival than everybody else.
True.
So I have FOMO for the people that are seeing the movies that I can't see.
Exactly.
And the people who are having great dinners or running into people or...
Exactly.
So, we can all sort of like participate in our own individual FOMOs.
Exactly.
But also like have a great time.
Yeah, but and in short, we're really grateful to you. And see you next year. And that's the way we frame it. That's wise.
The that
we
is?
We know the rest.
Yeah.
All right. We'll get back to you soon, guys.